think back to 1965 through 1968, what you're about ready to hear from Lost in Space. Here's a scene. Picture this in your mind now of Bill Mumy and Angela Cartwright. Here you go.
I haven't found specimens to fill them yet. You may go inside if you wish. Go ahead. It's perfectly safe.
No, Will, don't.
No harm will come to you. Go inside.
We don't want to go in, sir.
Do as I say. Go inside.
It even has that science fiction flavor.
I loved hearing the music from that little scene there. That was John Williams at the beginning of his career.
Yes, it was.
And, you know, she was always saying, no, Will, don't.
Yes, I was.
Well, that's great. Well, there's Angela Cartwright.
Now it's just no, Bill, don't.
And, of course, you all know Bill Mumy. Now, when you two both auditioned for Lost in Space, I guess you were naturals for what you did. Who picked you? Was it Irwin Allen? Did he have that kind of influence because this was his show? He created it?
Yeah. Actually, I was cast. Irwin called me in. He was a big fan of Danny Thomas, and he called me in and he said, oh, my God, I didn't know if you'd come in smoking a cigar. I'm so glad that you're the age you are. I think originally we were supposed to be twins, Penny and Will. And, you know, they loved, I don't know how Bill's interview went, but they just put us together.
They put us together, and as fate would have it, here we are today. Yeah, I had just finished a film at 20th Century Fox, and that was the studio that produced Lost in Space. I'd done this film with Jimmy Stewart called Dear Bridget. And they actually just... I didn't audition for Lost in Space. It was offered to me, and it was the first television series I'd done, and I really wanted to do it because Will Robinson was like a little superhero, and superheroes were what got me interested in becoming an actor in the first place when I was like 3 or 4, watching Guy Williams as Zorro and George Reeves as Superman, and it was that kind of character that inspired me to want to get inside the TV in the first place. So Will was kind of a little superhero, so I was very happy to do Lost.
Was there ever anybody in the robot, or was that like a puppet?
No, it was. I can't believe you're asking us that question, George.
Oh, I've got a few more.
I can't believe you're asking us if there was a man inside the robot. But yeah, it was Bobby May. Bob May was inside the robot. He came from a vaudevillian family. He worked very hard on the show, and he memorized all of the dialogue, and he delivered the lines. But of course, it sounded like a man in a fiberglass box,
sure,
because as fate would have it, it was a man in a fiberglass box. So his dialogue was then re-recorded by Dick Tufeld, who was very happening voiceover guy at the time. So it was actually two actors who gave the robot character.
Is he still with us?
Both of them are still with us, yeah. Bobby and Dick are still around, although they're not exactly a band. It's not like the Smothers Brothers.
And you, Angela, had a little alien pet monkey.
I did, Debbie.
Debbie the Bloop?
Bloop, yeah. Bloop, bloop, bloop. And you know what? It was actually Bill that wrote me an email. What was it? 4 or 5 years ago. But Debbie is dead. So she passed away about 5 years ago. But she had a great career.
Oh, my God. How long did she live?
A long time. I'm not going to say how long, but
30
if you
some
do
years.
The math.
She had two television series going at the same time. When we were doing Lost in Space, she was also co-starring in a series called Doctari, short-lived.
What kind of monkey was she?
Chimpanzee.
A little chimp,
yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those things can be vicious.
Well, Angela's now going to tell you the story of why Debbie was detoothed.
I know, but I had nothing to do with that because I love animals and I love pets, but she did bite me one day and then everybody freaked out and I was fine. I never said anything about it, but she came back and she didn't have any teeth. I feel terrible about that.
Oh.
But it didn't hurt her much. I mean, she went on to be the face of Planet of the Apes.
Right, and, they used her face for the... For the mold for that, right?
Yes.
And she continued to gum many of us.
And then all of a sudden, we came back, I think, in the third season, and she wasn't there anymore.
She wanted too much money.
I guess so.
It was, now, the person who is not with us anymore, of course, was Jonathan Harris.
Yes, indeed, a one of a kind. There shall never be another. Oh, dear.
Started in Lost in Space. I mean, he was out to kill the family.
Yes, he was right? A nasty person.
Yes,
don't
he
you
was.
Forget it.
But he changed. You know, he became more of a comedian type.
Yes, the whole series. You know, it's funny if you look at Lost in Space, and I don't really advise anybody do. But
no, I'm
don't
kidding.
Say that it's fun.
It is fun. I love. Yeah, I love Lost in Space. But you know, if you look at it, the first
you're a bad, bad man, Bill.
That's all right. I'm still landlord of the cornfield. If you look at it, right, the first 20-some episodes are pretty much an adventure ensemble sci-fi.
The black serious, and white season.
Serious sci-fi type project. And then the next 25 or 30, it becomes this almost fantasy, campy, ridiculous, over-the-top humor, slapstick
colorful
stuff, where half the cast are playing it straight and half the cast are playing it for huge laughs. And I think that was because at the time, the mid-60s, there was that short-lived pop art period,
exactly,
and everything went psychedelic and very campy, and Richard Nixon was on Laughing and things like that, and we just kind of jumped on that bandwagon.
We're talking Promised Planet.
And then the third season, it kind of was a melding of both. It was somewhat back to sci-fi half the time, and the other half, we were standing around talking to giant carrots, you know. It was just
but when you
wild
hear Jonathan, when he used to say that he had to really create something that would keep him on the show, and I don't know how he worked this out, but he became like this kind of, you know, scaredy cat
lovable
person.
Buffoon.
Yeah, buffoon. Yeah. Perfect yeah word.
The truth was, Smith would have been killed off after six or seven
and he
episodes
knew that, too.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did, and he was very aware of it, so he changed the character. He shifted him into a
Bill's
little
channeling
humor.
John right
a bit of humor here and there.
He
and
wanted
one day
to keep the part.
One day, Irwin Allen came up to him, and he said, "I know what you're doing. Do more."
He liked it, huh?
That's what
and
he
that's
said
what he did, and he continued to do it, and the rest is television history. Oh, dear.
When the series finally ended, your numbers were pretty good. Much
yeah
better than the Star Trek ever did.
Well, they, yeah, you know, Star Trek certainly has gone on to wonderful
well
things.
It became its cult thing.
The numbers were good, and actually when we wrapped the end of the third season, and in today's numbers it would have been more like four seasons because we did 80 some episodes, 83, I think. But after the third season, we went on hiatus, and we were all told we'd be back. The show was actually picked up for a fourth season, and then there are varying stories on this, but what we've basically pretty much come to accept as the truth is that Irwin didn't get his scripts turned into the network on time, and the network wanted scripts, and Irwin was fussing around with that, and then we just, you know, went to the cornfield.
I had heard that old Bill Paley at the time, who head up CBS and basically was the founder, didn't want sci-fi on his show, on his network, and kind of eased it out.
That might have certainly something to do with it. I was brokenhearted because we never suspected
it.
Here you were with it. You know, when you do any television series, of course, even if you're a little kid, you know things come to an end.
Right.
But when you work with the same people for over 3 years, and then you're told, you know, you're going away for an 8-week hiatus and you'll be back. You know, nobody had any kind of like, well, goodbye, it's been great. We just said, see you in a few months, and then...
So it's a good thing we get together every now and then. And
we do. You know, it is one big dysfunctional family. 40 years later, the cast of Lost in Space still actually gets together just to socialize. It's kind of kooky.